Wednesday evening. You all right? Wednesday evening in the St. Louis Temple traditionally is Bhagavad Gita class, so we're going to have Bhagavad Gita class on Wednesday evening. And in sequence, the temple has gotten to, the verse that we'll be covering this evening is chapter 12, text number 16, devotional service. This is chapter 12, and we'll chant the verse together. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Anapeksha Shuchir Daksha. Udasino Gatavyataha. Sarvaramba Pritnyagi. Yomad Bhakta Same Priyaha. Anapeksha Shuchir Daksha. Udasino Gatavyataha. Sarvarambha Paritnyagi.
Sarvarambha Paritnyagi.
Yomad Bhakta Same Priyaha.
Yomad Bhakta Same Priyaha.
Anapekshaha.
Anapekshaha.
Neutral.
Neutral.
Shochihi.
Shochihi.
Pure.
Pure.
Dakshaha.
Dakshaha.
Expert.
Expert.
Udasinaha.
Udasinaha.
Free from care.
Free from
care. Gata vyataha.
Gata vyataha.
Free from all desires.
Free from all desires.
Sarva arambha.
Sarva arambha.
Of all endeavors.
Of all endeavors.
Parityagi.
Parityagi.
Renouncer.
Renouncer.
Yaha.
Yaha.
Anyone who.
Anyone
who. Mat bhaktaha.
My devotee.
Saha. He.
Me.
To me. Priyaha.
Very dear.
Translation. My devotee who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result is very dear to me. Purport. Vaishnava Prabhupada. Interesting beginning. Money may be offered to a devotee, but he should not struggle to acquire it. If automatically, by the grace of the Supreme, money comes to him, he is not agitated. Naturally, a devotee takes a bath at least twice in a day, and rises early in the morning for devotional service. Thus he is naturally clean, both inwardly and outwardly. A devotee is always expert because he fully knows the essence of all activities of life and he is convinced in the authoritative scriptures. A devotee never takes the part of a particular party, therefore he is carefree. He is never pained because he is free from all designations. He knows that his body is a designation. So if there are some bodily pains, he is free. The pure devotee does not endeavor for anything which is against the principles of devotional service. For example, constructing a big building requires great energy. And a devotee does not take to such a business if it does not benefit him by advancing his devotional service. He may construct a temple for the Lord, and for that he may take all kinds of anxiety, but he does not construct a big house for his personal relations. Anapeksha shuchir daksha udasino gatavyataha sarva ramba pratyagi yomad bhakta same priyaha. My devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities, who is pure, expert, without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result, is very dear to me. This section of the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita is the section where Krishna is describing those who have attained or are in the process of attaining the topmost stage of devotional service, because the previous section he's described the stages of devotional service. And the topmost stage is always remembering Krishna, fully engaging one's intelligence in him, and by so doing abides in Krishna always, without a doubt. So the other lower stages help one come to that stage, but that's the stage that's the topmost stage of devotional service, pure devotional service. So following that, there's a section of verses where Krishna is describing how he feels about those devotees. And he considers them very dear. And he particularly considers the qualities with which they offer their service as particularly pleasing to him. And we've discussed this many times previously, but those qualities that decorate a devotee are the decorator is Krishna, because all good qualities come from Krishna, and Krishna decorates his devotees with these nice qualities. In one sense, they come automatically. But then automatically makes it sound like a vending machine. And Krishna is not a vending machine. He's not. That the process of devotional service is not a mechanical process. Krishna is not obliged. As a vending machine is obliged, you put in the coins and pull the lever and whoosh, down comes the whatever you want. But Krishna is not obliged. He keeps a nice stock of vending items, and you just give what you're supposed to give and pull the lever and you get what you want. But it's a reciprocation of love. As the service offered is also an extension of love, Krishna's decorating of his devotee is an act of his loving dealing. And, moreover, the happiness that Krishna feels when his devotee approaches with those nice qualities makes Krishna very happy. And when the devotee sees Krishna very happy, their qualities increase. And as their qualities increase, Krishna becomes more happy, and so on. This Prabhupada calls this, and Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami calls this, transcendental competition. That's nice. Material competition that everybody is so much trained up in, particularly in, you know, particularly in school, and also in athletics, but, you know, in material life in general, in politics and business and, you know, material life in general, it's material competition. Survival of the fittest, or, you know, the strong dominate the weaker. Jivo jivasya jivanam. And the Bhagavatam expression, the strong, or the weak becomes food for the strong. One living entity becomes food for another living entity. And that's the way of material life. But the way of pleasing Krishna is different. The way of pleasing Krishna is through a submission of loving service offered to him. And because the devotee has love in their heart towards Krishna, or is striving to awaken that love for Krishna in their heart, Krishna decorates them with nice devotees, with nice qualities. So the first one that's being mentioned, the first quality, I understand that these qualities, you're spending a lot of time, one quality at a time, but I'll cover the verse. Neutral is the first. Anapeksha. Anapeksha. Neutral. So Prabhupada takes money as the first thing about being neutral. And money may be offered to a devotee, but he should not struggle to acquire it. If automatically, by the grace of the Supreme Lord, money comes to him, he is not agitated. So it's like if you're walking along the street and some money jumps into your pocket, it's okay. And if money doesn't just jump into your pocket, it's okay. The explanation that Prabhupada gives about a person who's serving on behalf of Krishna, particularly the brahmachari or sannyasi, their meditation should not be, where is money, where is money? Their meditation should be engaging those who they're serving in Krishna's service. And then whatever, the training, this is in relation to the training of a brahmachari. The training of the brahmachari. It's right in the verse in the Bhagavatam. And so many times Prabhupada repeat this. So I'll repeat it too. The brahmachari lives in the ashram of the guru. And one of the activities that the brahmachari living in the ashram of the guru is trained to do is to go beg alms. It teaches one humility, because you're this humble person coming before a qualified person saying, please offer some alms. So Prabhupada's description is, the boy says, I am representing such and such ashram, and would you kindly give some alms for my guru? And in cultured society, it's not a slam of the door in the face. It's, surely I'll offer some alms to your guru. And some atar, some rice, some roti, something. Prabhupada says, not so much, but something. And something, 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 and then that is given to the guru. The guru gives those items to his wife. The wife cooks those items, offers to the guru's deity. And then the boys in the school are called to come and take their meal. So the training is humility and representing the spiritual master, and everything belongs to the spiritual master. So when that boy grows up, it's ingrained. He's representing the spiritual master. He's acting in a different capacity, but on behalf of the spiritual master. And everything belongs to the spiritual master. Nothing is mine. Everything belongs to the spiritual master. And that means it belongs to Krishna. Because the spiritual master is simply acting on behalf of Krishna. He's a qualified spiritual master. And so this neutrality or detachment from wealth is from childhood, it's trained. But it doesn't mean one cannot have anything to do with wealth. It means that one is detached from trying to acquire wealth. And even when it comes to like this thing at the bottom of constructing a temple, Prabhupada wrote one letter where there was a time when the devotees in Brooklyn, the history was the first center was at 26 Second Avenue. It was just a storefront. And in time they outgrew the storefront. It just wasn't big enough. So they got a place across the street, up a couple of blocks at 21 First Avenue, or no, something First Avenue. And, excuse me, 61 Second Avenue, that was it. 61 Second Avenue, on the opposite side of the street. And it was upstairs, and it was a larger space. And for a long time it was 61 Second Avenue. And then, after some time, the devotees outgrew that space, and particularly the ashram accommodation. And so, it was rental and rental, because we didn't have any money to buy anything, so then it was rental. And the rental was Henry Street, 439 Henry Street in Brooklyn, because property in Brooklyn was less expensive, and so it was a double brownstone. And you know, lots of living space upstairs, big temple room, lots of space for the deities. When the deities were first brought, it was just Radha and Krishna, and it was upstairs above Prabhupada's quarters on the second floor, because the plan was to renovate the ground floor on the other side and make it into a temple. And Prabhupada was at that time preaching in India, and he had received Radha Govinda from the Queen of Jaipur and had shipped them to New York to be worshipped in that temple. Yay! So, after living for some time in that Henry Street temple, the devotees wanted to buy a building in Manhattan, back to Manhattan. And they found a building. At that time, Catholic Charities had to dispose of some properties. So one of the properties that Catholic Charities was, because the way the Catholic Church is set up is they separate their philanthropic activity from their worship activity. So there's the Catholic Church and there's Catholic Charities. So Catholic Charities had a building that was like a old age home, and Tosan Krishna found that building, and it was, you know, even at that time it was peanuts, and now it's like, anyway, won't go with the numbers. It was a very reasonable price. So they wrote to Srila Prabhupada and asking, can we buy this building in Manhattan? 12-story building in Manhattan. And Prabhupada didn't, you know, get so excited. He said, that would be very nice, but you should not entertain going forward with this idea if it puts the devotees in anxiety month by month, how are we going to pay the mortgage? So I want to see the numbers of how you can pay the mortgage. What is your, and you know, and he emphasized again, he saw the numbers and they were fudged. Anyway, and so he approved, but you know, the condition was that the devotees not be in anxiety month by month how to pay the mortgage. So they bought the building, and sure enough, month by month there was this big anxiety how to pay the mortgage, just exactly what Prabhupada said not to do. And I became temple president during some part of that era when, well, this is so many years ago. But every month, by the third week, rolling into the third week, and by the end of the third week it was $10,000 in the red every month. And, you know, how do you get $10,000? Now $10,000 is, you know, I mean, that would be so many more dollars today. And where are you going to get that? And it's not like, okay, well, we can't get it. You have to. It was anxiety. Exactly what Prabhupada said not to do. So fortunately, Radha Damodar Party came to the rescue because they needed a base where they could work from. And New York was a good base because we could also give them some Sankirtan devotees, and any new devotees that were made would go join the Radha Damodar Party, and so that was the deal. They had the cash flow, they took care of the $10,000 deficit per month, and that became their headquarters, their base. And the buses would come and go, and the brahmacharis would come and go, and it was great. Till the Radha Damodar Party came to a close, and then it was, how are we going to pay the mortgage every month? That's a little mystery. So, a simple thing is we live according to our means, but even, you know, living according to your means, then, you know, well, how much do I need to be happy? So the teaching here is one should be happy with whatever comes easily. And if it doesn't come easily, then you don't go nuts. You don't strive to achieve this gargantuan thing. It's not so anapekshitaha. One should be neutral towards such things. If it comes, then one isn't agitated. If it doesn't come, then one isn't agitated. One is neutral. We strive to serve Krishna. We're not like, you know, lying in a hammock, sipping lemonade, waiting for money to jump into the hammock. Saying, you know, if Krishna wants money to jump into the hammock, it's okay. We won't be agitated. We're striving to serve Krishna. We're doing our duties in a responsible manner. And if it comes, so like Sanatana Goswami and his arrangement for the temple for Madan Mohan, he didn't go running around, you know. But because of his purity, someone built the temple for Madan Mohan. And, you know, a converse situation is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He personally, although he was the chief magistrate, he went door to door with a message. And it was purposeful also, because he was stating that the place of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth was different than all those persons that had vested financial interest in saying it was at a different location. Their whole income, their whole livelihood was centered around something that he was saying isn't true. So he went door to door, requesting everyone, every gentleman would give just 1 rupee. It was purposeful to help, you know, if they say, oh, that's not the birthplace of Mahaprabhu, then he would give all the reasons. And what did he want? 1 rupee. Well, let's assume that some people gave more than 1 rupee. Some persons probably were very inspired by his purity and his humility and gave many, many rupees. And the temple that he built was modest. That the temple that Bhaktivinoda Thakur built was what is now just like a living quarters for some of the residents there. But what Bhaktisiddhanta built was something very large. And what Prabhupada wanted built for the temple of Vedic Planetarium is something very large. But it was a gesture. There's a little video recording of Srila Prabhupada speaking with Ambarish in Detroit, and Lake Ashravanti is there also in that little video clip. And Prabhupada is speaking about the temple of Vedic Planetarium, and Sarup Damodar Maharaj is there, and Prabhupada casually turns to Ambarish and says, would you like to build this temple of Vedic Planetarium? something, you know, very offhandedly, and he smiled. And Ambrish said, yes, I would like to try to do that, Srila Prabhupada. I said, very good. Then you can have that service. Mm. And Ambrish Prabhu is such a sincere person that that exchange, which was on video, is something that so many years later is still carrying him forward in his devotional service at a time when the economy for Ford Motor Company isn't great. But Prabhupada asked him to do it. So he's planning to do that. With his own resources, his commitment is, I will build the basic structure. All the finished work won't be done, but the plumbing and the foundation and the walls and the basic structure will be completed with his own resources. And he's very confident because they did some, what do you call it, test studies to see if people would be willing to participate in a project like this. And, you know, there's huge willingness. And if it gets completed to that extent, people will give to, you know, call the altar by their name, or, you know, that this door or that dome or something. You know how it is. So, but it's not an overstretch for him. But he's very conscientious because it's his grandfather's money. Not even, but he earned it. So he has to, he's feeling very careful, very responsible to spend it wisely. So if it comes, one doesn't become, this is Prabhupada's, if automatically by the grace of the Supreme money comes to him, he is not agitated. So with not agitated, without not agitated, engaging in service to one's capacity always, with or without not agitated, neutral. The next quality that's mentioned is suci. So a lot can be said about suci. Suci means clean, and it indicates a brahmana also. So Prabhupada is speaking about cleanliness, bathing twice a day. Actually, a brahmana will bathe, or a sannyasi rather, is to bathe thrice a day. But then Prabhupada says minimum twice a day. So in the morning when you first rise, in the evening when you finish your day's activity, twice daily. And what's the brahmana rising early in the morning to perform your devotional service. So the devotional service is making the inside clean. Make the outside clean, make the inside clean. And our primary activity of making the inside clean is what? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And performing Mangalarti, worshipping the deity, reciting the scriptures, hearing the scriptures, offering standard prayers, purifying ourselves internally, and maintaining external cleanliness at the same time. By that practice, it's already built in. Naturally, the devotee is clean. And Daksha. Well, Daksha doesn't have a good reputation from the Srimad Bhagavatam, but this is a different Daksha. It's a quality. It's a quality of being expert. It's mentioned in the qualities of a devotee, that a devotee is expert, 26 qualities of a devotee. He's expert. And Prabhupada really narrows it down. What does expert mean? We're speaking a little bit about this in the soul connection topic of finding your voice. And one of the points that was made is learn the skill set necessary to perform a particular activity very nicely. But Prabhupada isn't addressing that, the skill set of doing something very nicely, although that's part of it. But that is resting upon something else. A devotee is always expert because he fully knows the essence of all activities of life and is convinced of the authoritative scriptures. Knowing the essence of all activities of life. So what's the essence of all activities of life? Who would like to say? What's the essence of all activities of life? The connection to Krishna, love of Krishna. Yeah? Devotional service. Our constitutional position is we're servants of Krishna. So the essence of life is serving Krishna. And when you're serving Krishna, you want to please Krishna. And when you want to please Krishna, you want to do your activities very nicely so that Krishna is pleased. Take any activity. Take cooking. It's not... There are persons who are expert cooks that aren't devotees because their skill in mixing this and that and coming up with something is simply for the taste of the tongue. But that's not the standard of expert that's pleasing to Krishna. What's pleasing to Krishna is the person, however simple, the love with which they prepare and offer to Krishna makes it very pleasing. And because they have love for Krishna, on that basis they want to make the flavor or the spicing or the texture or the color or the aroma or the whatever. And the ingredients should be the finest because of their devotion for Krishna. That is pleasing to Krishna, and that's the standard of expert. They know the real purpose of life, and they're convinced in the authoritative scriptures. Because they're convinced in the authoritative scriptures, they don't deviate. They don't deviate. They can't deviate because they're convinced. Even if there's something that's pulling them this way or pushing them that way, they can't deviate. They can't budge an inch from their conviction. And Krishna decorates that conviction with expertise in their service. That's the standard of expert. It's the unchanging foundation of being expert. Udashino, free from care. This sounds like a really nice person, someone you really want to know. All these nice qualities. A devotee never takes part in a particular party. A devotee never takes the part of a particular party. Therefore, he is carefree. Like Krishna. Those of you that were in Chicago over the weekend can recall how Dravida very beautifully described the apparent contradiction of Krishna having not any partiality towards anyone, na me dveshosti na priyaha. But in the next breath he says that, but my devotee is very dear to me. I'm not feeling particularly inimical towards anyone, nor particularly partial towards anyone, but my devotee is very dear to me. And that's just Krishna's loving quality. Or as the devotee approaches, as one approaches Krishna, Krishna is neutral. He reciprocates as one approaches to him. But it's not when someone approaches Krishna with love, he's a stone, or dull, or cold, or non-feeling. He just pretends or acts as if he has affection for his devotee. That's not it. When approached with affection, he reciprocates with affection. Actually, like a loving father, he has affection towards all. So even those that approach him with some inimical disposition, Krishna doesn't hate them, dislike them, reject them, trash them, beat them, send lightning bolts at them and hammer them. Krishna's not like that. He reciprocates with the mood, the regard, the disposition that one has for him. So someone says, Prabhupada explains, someone says, Krishna's my enemy. So Krishna considers, oh, he wants me to be his enemy? All right, I'll be his enemy. Not like, oh yeah, I'll show him. I'll be his enemy and I'll pulverize the guy. That's not Krishna. That's not Krishna. When he defeats Kamsa, he liberates Kamsa. He positions the soul of Kamsa once again in the Vaikuntha realm. That's Krishna. And he relieves the fear and anxiety of all the citizens that wicked, terrorizing Kamsa is finished. But the same Krishna who with one fist destroys Kamsa, who is the terror of the universe, at the same time, that same Krishna runs in fear of the stick in the hand of Mother Jasoda. Anyway. There's a pastime in Chaitanya Bhagavat that describes one time when Nimai was misbehaving. His mother was scolding him, so Nimai brushed his mother to the side and she fell to the ground. He thought that he had made her unconscious. She was pretending. And he began crying and crying and crying, and the other ladies came and said, you should get a coconut quickly and break the coconut and she'll be okay. So he got a coconut, broke the coconut, and Mother Sachi opened her eyes and smiled. He thought, oh, the Supreme Lord is so kind, he's brought Mother Sachi back to life just by breaking the coconut. So he's softer than a flower and harder than a thunderbolt. But it's not out of ill disposition. It's relieving Kamsa of all of the wickedness and sinfulness within him. So a devotee never takes the part of a particular party. Therefore he is carefree. Very good advice. There are situations that arise then that, you know, there's this side, that side. Meaning in politics, there should be, a devotee should have discretion, a discrimination between what are standards and uphold standards. Anyway, this is you start digging into that topic, it can get very complicated. We should be discriminating and or discerning. We should understand that, you know, what's what. But when understanding what's what, we should be careful in not being, you know, a party-spirited personality. Like one example that comes to mind. I don't want to belabor the point, and please don't ask me a bunch of questions about this one. But during Prabhupada's time, there are many letters that indicate that Srila Prabhupada wanted, as Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur wanted. He wanted that his Bhaktisiddhanta wanted that his followers would cooperate. There's many letters from Prabhupada when he came to America. He was requesting assistance from his godbrothers to provide, you know, send me a madranga or a harmonium or a brahmachari or some help or something. And, you know, there was no response. And then after, fast forward in time, and Prabhupada had, by the grace of Krishna, become a little successful in the beginning. And he brought some devotees back to India and conducted preaching activity in India as Bhaktisiddhanta had done. The response was very positive. And so there's this, it's described in Lilamrita, some devotees were then approached by Prabhupada's godbrothers, and those devotees were then brought into their ashram. Those of you that went with us to Vrindavan, you remember one of the days that it rained in November was when we went to Nandagram. First we went to Vrindakund, and then to Nandagram. We went back to Vrindakund for lunch. We couldn't even have lunch because it was raining too hard enough that we couldn't sit and have lunch peacefully. So we went to a schoolhouse. Remember that? The schoolhouse was, Dinabandhu told me this on the side, so now I'm sharing it in this forum. It was built by one of Prabhupada's disciples, whose name was Rishikeshananda. When Prabhupada was in India, he was one of the early devotees that came with Prabhupada to India. And Prabhupada went back to the West, and he then requested Rishikeshananda to take shelter and in the ashram of Ban Maharaj. So what happened was, Prabhupada would regularly write letters to Rishikeshananda. Bhan Maharaj received the letters, opened the envelope, read the letters, and never gave them to Rishikeshananda. And Rishikeshananda would continually write to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was writing to him, understanding eventually that he never got his letters. And in the course of time, he took on Rishikeshananda as his disciple, because he was a very qualified person, capable person, intelligent person, and one of the things that he did under the auspices of Ban Maharaj was he started that school. So it's not presently an ISKCON project, it's a whichever is the Gaudiya Mission Ashram of Ban Maharaj school in Vrindavan. And after some time, Rishikeshananda left India and went to somewhere far east, and Dinabandhu said he's been in touch with him from time to time because, you know, because of his previous residence in Vrindavan and Dinabandhu's liking for Vrindavan. But things like that happened historically. There's others, don't need to go into so much history, but there was, they weren't assisting Srila Prabhupada, or working cooperatively with Srila Prabhupada, they were doing something else. So then Prabhupada made it very clear that we should not associate with his godbrothers. We should respect, but we shouldn't associate. And there's plenty of history in ISKCON where devotees didn't follow that instruction and they ended up in the soup. In different forms and fashions. And so to this day, the leaders of ISKCON are holding that position that we should not associate with those that are in not, you know, strictly following Srila Prabhupada's teachings and within his society under the authority of the GBC, because that's what Prabhupada wanted for us. We can respect, but not intimately associate with. So we don't need to get into a big, you know, taking sides like Prabhupada is saying here. But we stay faithful. Something like, you know, a member of a family, a child, or a wife, or someone who's a member of a family. We're faithful to our family. We don't have to go around saying, we don't like that family, we don't like that family, we don't like that family. We remain faithful to our family. And within Prabhupada's society, we remain faithful to Prabhupada and Prabhupada's teachings and the way that Prabhupada wanted things to be done. Somebody else wants to do something in a different way, you know, we're not going to run around and criticize that someone. We're just going to remain faithful to Prabhupada and what Prabhupada wanted us to do. Remaining respectful towards all living entities and remaining very faithful to Srila Prabhupada and his teachings and the instructions that he gave us and how to conduct our lives. That way we can remain carefree. Next quality that's mentioned kata vyataha, which translates freed from all distress. And Prabhupada writes, he is never pained because he is free from all designations. He knows that his body is a designation. So if there's some bodily pains, he is free. Make two comments about this one. One is the general sense of designation, the term that we hear is upadhi. What does upadhi mean? One of our kids, what does upadhi mean? Teenagers can answer too. What does upadhi mean? Designation. What's an example of designation? Lord Chaitanya gives an explanation of what he's not. Kiva vipra, kiva nyasi, shudra kini noi. I'm not a vipra, learned scholar, not a sannyasi, not a shudra. Those are designations. The varnashram system is a system of man, woman, brahmana, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas. These are designations, is not who we are. We may follow a particular set of duties according to one of those designations or combination of those designations, a grahastha brahmana, something like that, or grahastha kshatriya, or grahastha vaishya, grahastha shudra. But that's not who we are. So Vidura was, by designation, he was Shudra, because his mother was a Shudrani, a maidservant of Ambika. So his designation was Shudra, but he was vastly learned and very wise, and everyone, even Bhishma Dev, accepted his counsel regularly. Who goes to a Shudra for counsel? Not because of his birth or his occupation, but because of the quality of the door, everyone went to him for advice and wisdom. So, as long as one identifies with that designation, then one will feel inconvenienced, whether it's this position or that position. So Vidura was insulted by Duryodhana because of his birth. But Vidura didn't feel insulted. He didn't feel pain
Oh, he called me a sudra.
He wasn't pained because of the designation, which he knew he wasn't. Same for us. We're not Vidura. We're not, you know, the wise, sagacious Vidura that even advises Bhishma Dev. That's not us. But we're not our body. And we're not the designation that someone may rightly say, you're this. And it may be, like in Vidura's case, who he really is. Another example of that is Prabhupada would speak about it's an offense to consider a Vaishnava in terms of their birth, because Vaishnava is so, like in India, the Smarta Brahmanas would say, you know, the Westerners. And because they're Westerners, they're not qualified by birth, they're not qualified or disqualified to be Vaishnavas and to be Brahmanas and, you know, to learn the scripture. Because according to Smarta regulation, that's a no-no. Without understanding the Vaishnava principles of, by the process of hearing and chanting and Vaishnava ritual, one can become purified. And by that purification, qualified. So if someone sees, according to designation, like, you know, because I'm born in a particular body, I can't enter the Jagannath Puri temple. I don't feel bad because of that. Hurt, or, you know, it's worthwhile to have some discussion with those who think differently. Is for the purpose of strength of mind, but not for the purpose of winning a victory or something like that, so that now I can go into the temple. Anyway. Or even physical pain, which is what Prabhupada is speaking of here. The other is a mental pain, someone who is saying some sharp words about one's situation. But that even physical pain, Prabhupada was definitely on that platform of where, by not identifying with the body, he was not unaware of but transcendental to physical pain. Three things very quickly. Harisori. We were having prasadam together at our GBC meeting, and I asked him, how's your health? Just happened to ask, how's your health? Because, you know, he wasn't looking so strong, and he described, I have this particular malady, and, you know, it's very painful, and, you know, it's gotten better, I'm taking certain treatment. He's speaking like that in a personal way, but because he's sorry, his thought immediately went to Prabhupada. And he was describing Prabhupada's health condition. And he went on for like 20 minutes about Prabhupada's health condition, just like absorbed in Prabhupada Katha, and described how many things were wrong with his body that none of us knew. I didn't have a clue. You know, his kidneys, and then uric acid was throughout his body, and it was very painful, and it's multiple things were really bad with his body. And Prabhupada just went on like it, you know, didn't touch him. He said one night, out of the whole time that he was his servant, one night at 1 o'clock in the morning, Prabhupada rang his bell, you know, for Harisori to come and attend him. So he got out of bed and went to attend to what Prabhupada wanted. And he said he was sitting there shivering. His body was shaking. And he said, I'm in too much pain to translate. Which meant other nights he was like right on the brink, perhaps, of too much pain, but went ahead anyways. constantly in pain. Or another, Prabhupada had a big abscess. You know what an abscess is? A tooth that's infected and it's swollen. You ever seen anything like that? It's inside. The gum becomes infected and the whole... So he had an abscess. And the devotees wanted Prabhupada to go to a doctor, a dentist. And Prabhupada wouldn't go to a dentist. So, you know, they got cloves and they were trying this and that. And so one time during that stretch, Prabhupada was taking prasadam. He reached in his mouth, pulled out a tooth. The tooth that was infected around, the gum was infected, handed it to Hari Sori and said, "Here, you can have this." And continued taking prasadam. You know, when you get a boil or a little something or a toothache, this is like, you know, 10 times that. Just transcendental. Another that I personally witnessed was during the Krishna Balaram Mandir installation. There were a lot of people coming to see Srila Prabhupada at that time. And one of those times, somebody left some water, or let's say spilt some water, because those of you who have been in Vrindavan, you know where Prabhupada's room is, and there's a sitting room, and to get into the sitting room is where, from his study, and then another place where he took prasad, and then his room where he rested was upstairs. So Prabhupada came and walked along where that fireplace area is and sat down. So as he was leaving, someone spilt water and left it on the floor. So his foot slipped on the water. And he caught himself on that, the fireplace little ledge, and he twisted his ankle and immediately started to swell. Because he knew the science, he immediately asked for certain leaves and certain herbs and a poultice, and, you know, started mashing them and made a poultice and took some string and tied the string around the leaves, and so it stayed on his ankle. And he chastised the devotees heavily who just spilled something and left it. But it wasn't like, you know, it's because now you've given me some pain. He was transcendental to the pain. You know, but it was the negligence he didn't tolerate. And I remember very clearly sitting in the temple room after deep reading the deities, and Prabhupada sat down for Guru Puja, and there was this, you know, for several days, this swollen ankle and this poultice wrapped around his ankle. But he carried on like, you know, he didn't like limp, and he just like, boom, transcendental. He dealt with the pain, he dealt with the malady, but he didn't dote on it. He wasn't absorbed in, oh, my ankle hurts. And again, it's not that there wasn't pain, the body was... The seed cells were firing. You know, the signal was going to the brain. There's pain. But his consciousness was above the platform of the body. Factually. And therefore, he is never pained because he is free from all designations. He knows that his body is a designation. So if there are some bodily pains, he is free. So we're running out of time, I'm not going to carry on further. All of these qualities, when Krishna sees the devotee has these qualities, Krishna is very pleased. He holds that devotee very dear to him. And actually, because the devotee is holding Krishna very dear to him. But Krishna is feeling something also. As the devotee is feeling something, Krishna is feeling something. Naturally. So any comments or questions from anyone? Yes. Yes.
About the Gahastra system, you know, with the Brahma and Kshatriya, is it kind of like an unorthodox or perverted way just to see it in terms of birthright, not quality, or is there some kind of merit to that other way of looking at it?
Yeah, the merit to the other way of looking at it is that people actually had qualities. They were very careful followers of the Vedic system. And because of being very careful followers of the Vedic system, they were entitled to a certain birth in a family that would further carry or develop those qualities. Even so, it wasn't that automatically. There are plenty of examples where it wasn't automatically by birth in a certain family one would have that quality. Prahlad Maharaj's classic example. His father was demoniac, big time demoniac, but he was a pure devotee. So, and the other way around also. Or the sons of Rishabhdev, he had 100 sons, and some of them were kings, and some of them were brahmanas, and some of them were Mahabhagavatas. So, nonetheless, that although there's exception, there's a tendency. Prabhupada gives this example. If I'm the son of a physician, then when I'm a little boy, I learn from my father how to make medicines and how to read pulse, and I learn the art of being a physician just by being the son of a physician, because culture was like that. The son would assist the father in his trade. It became a family business, a family occupation. So that there's tendency, it makes it easier. It doesn't mean automatically he's a qualified physician. Or conversely, someone that's not born in the family of a physician cannot become a physician. But there's a tendency. And go back again to the when the Varnashram or Daivi Varnashram system was flourishing, there were qualified brahmanas that would see the qualities of the children and engage them accordingly and train them accordingly. There was that support. But without that support, it doesn't follow anymore. Or, according to the scripture, in this age of Kali, everyone is born lower than Sudra, by birth lower than Sudra, because the sangskaras aren't being followed. The sangskaras are necessary for the higher orders of society, and they're not being followed. But in previous ages, it would indicate tendency, generally. Anything else?
More a comment. This is something I'm working on in relation with Daksha. Krishna decorates his devotee with expertise in carrying out his services, and the devotee also strives to do his services in an expert manner. But when we bring into the realm of devotional service our conditioning of how perfection or, you know, the strive for perfection has been ingrained in us from our cultural backgrounds, then there seems to be an apparent paradox between self-acceptance and striving for perfection.
It's the same question you asked in Chicago. It's just use different words, that's all. The answer doesn't change. We just, where is your shelter? Where is your dependency? It's if you depend upon Krishna, then that's Krishna. That's the root whereby the Krishna connection is made, and Krishna decorates. But if the dependency or the shelter is my cleverness, my different skills, and I'll put this skill together with that skill, and I'll do it, and then it's the wrong dependency. Or it makes our connection with material nature, the external energy. So even if, like this example I gave of cooking, there are persons who are, you know, they go to, they become a chef. They go to school and they do it for a lifetime. But it doesn't have that, Krishna wouldn't accept that. And it's not satisfying in the way that one who prepares prasad or food to be offered to Krishna with love and devotion, it just doesn't satisfy in the same way. Aside from what the spiritual benefit is, it just doesn't have the same satisfaction. For oneself or for others. So, what to do? We turn up to the Krishna channel. Don't beat yourself up because this other tendency is there. Just don't energize it. Don't turn to it and, you know, try to get something done expertly simply because, you know, I've got all these tools on the shelf. They can be used, on the other hand, as the one before the zeros. They can be used, this skill, that skill can be used in service to Krishna. Let's say somebody has musical ability. Just natural musical ability. Some persons are like that. They're good. Or vocal ability or artistic ability or something. Put the one in front of it and be one's shelter is to pleasing Krishna. Not the resourcing of my skill set, and I can do it because I know I can do it. False ego. Anything else?
Yes? How do we take bodily pain as a service to Krishna?
How do we take bodily pain as a service to Krishna? I think to respond to your question very much depends upon the circumstance, because we don't need to take bodily pain as a service to Krishna. Let's say, for example, it's very cold out. So, if it's our service to go on Sankirtan, or it's our service to go purchase the vegetables, and it's cold outside, we tolerate it because we have our service to Krishna to do. We're not like, we prepare ourselves so we're sufficiently warm, but we don't pay attention, we don't like not do that service. It's right in Bhagavad Gita, when it's in the month of Magh, you take bath, and you know, when it's in the summertime, you cook in the kitchen, although it's hot. You make the stove hot. You cook because it's for Krishna. So we accept that connected with some service, there may be some inconvenience or some pain, but that's part of the service. You don't not do the service, in other words. You accept that that's occasionally that's going to be there. That's not a reason to do or to not do, because it's pleasurable or because it's painful. Yeah.
Maharaj, many times I think about the children education.
The which?
Education of children.
Education of children.
I came very late.
You're happy to hear that he talked to you about your education, right?
I mean, I
started Krishna consciousness after your children had some education. Is that what you're saying?
No, I started my Krishna consciousness activities seriously after I was too much academically, you know, like having the degrees.
Okay.
Got my PhD.
Yeah, yeah.
But someone's children now, you know, someone getting a school education, grade schools, and what aspiration we should have for children, like some of my friends who are not in Krishna consciousness, they say, no, you should teach your children, let them do PhD and become better scientists than you, and they should have all kind of, you know, designations. And in Krishna consciousness, when we try to limit our children, then we should not be aspiring for too much education in academics. And so, like, where
it depends on the individual, you know, what level of academic, you know, stage one should. But more important than that question is the development of character. That's what real education is. And if you can, with your children, work with them for development of character, that's the most important thing. And then by evaluating their disposition, then one child may be different than another child, is different than the next child, is different than it. But, you know, what's their disposition? What's the endowment that Krishna has given them? Encourage them to use that in Krishna service, this way or that way. That's the duty of an educator. It's the duty of a teacher, the duty of a parent, is the duty of a spiritual master, is to see someone's inclination and engage them accordingly. On the foundation of good character. It's not a not a cookie cutter thing with, you know, all children should or all children shouldn't. It's, you know, what's as far as how far they should go with their education. The thing that's universal is character should be there. That's the primary responsibility of a parent. And then, what's their inclination? What's the gift that Krishna has given them? And nurture that. Someone else? Yes.
Guru Maharaj, regarding this last point of not striving for some result, I find it quite challenging to go into services with an idea of what the outcome should be and then to accept, you know, when it's not the outcome. I really struggle with this.
Well, there should be some objective. And we apply ourselves as best we can. And the rest is up to Krishna. I would recommend that you, when you get in those moments, think of Srila Prabhupada starting the Hare Krishna movement in New York City. And ask yourself the question, was Srila Prabhupada qualified? That's an easy one to answer. And did Srila Prabhupada make his best effort? He was qualified and he made his best effort. And look what happened. Nothing. And did Prabhupada become discouraged? So connect with that. In time, in Krishna's time, not in Prabhupada's, you know, timetable, but Krishna's timetable, there was an explosion of success. But initially there wasn't, apparently. But the success was that he was serving without consideration of results, out of love and dedication and commitment to his spiritual master. He had an order. He was carrying that order to his best capacity. That was success. You've heard this before, but I'll say it again. Our department is service, and Krishna's department is controlling. If you get them confused, you have a problem. That Krishna's department is serving us, and our department is controlling. We're servants, and Krishna's the controller. Whatever he wants. We should strive by right means and make our very best Krishna conscious effort and rely upon Krishna. For the results. That's Krishna consciousness. Okay. And there, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.